Jackson, W266DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm Matt Piper. On this Labor Day, Vice President Harris brought along President Biden to campaign for the first time since he dropped out of the race. They addressed a crowd of IBEW union members in Pittsburgh, where Biden spoke of Harris's GOP rival, Donald Trump.
You think he cares about all the work you do every day and how hard it is? Yeah. You think he cares about good paying jobs for hardworking people who built this economy?
Thousands of Israeli protesters have called on their government to reach a hostage and ceasefire deal with Hamas after the Israeli military recovered the bodies of six hostages who had been held by the militant group. Our MTS Tayeb is in Tel Aviv.
Thousands of people desperately trying to see that kind of agreement happen. We've been hearing politically from Mr. Netanyahu and other Israeli leaders in his extreme far right-wing cabinet were pretty much suggesting that a deal is not close. Now, in the background of all of this, the U.S., of course, has been strongly pushing for this agreement, which would see Israeli hostages released from Gaza and a ceasefire.
The U.S., which still refuses to acknowledge Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro's electoral win, has seized his plane, saying it was purchased in violation of sanctions. CBS's Christian Benavides from Florida.
The Venezuelan government released a statement saying that what the U.S. has done in this case is criminal and that they'll figure out a way to respond accordingly, that they said that there may be potential monetary damages involved here.
Meantime, Venezuelan authorities are seeking an arrest warrant for opposition former presidential candidate Edmundo Gonzalez. The prosecutor is seeking the warrant in its request to a judge focused on terror-related crimes over the election. But the ruling party never showed any detailed results showing Maduro the winner, while the opposition obtained 80% of vote tally sheets showing Maduro lost by a wide margin against Gonzalez. Our Jim Crisula with a juvenile double murder suspect.
Police in the small northwest Louisiana town of Minden say a 10-year-old boy has confessed to fatally shooting two people, the 82-year-old former mayor of the town of 11,000 and his 31-year-old daughter. There's no word on the relationship between the young boy and the two people who were killed.
The Paralympics facing the same problems the Olympic Games face.
Remember during the Olympics a few weeks ago, they had to postpone some of the water sports because the water quality in the Seine River wasn't up to par? Same thing's going on now during the Paralympic Games in Paris. Triathlon competitions that were supposed to take place yesterday got canceled and moved to today. Heavy rain over the weekend caused wastewater runoff, which made the bacteria levels in the river unsafe.
That's CBS's Stacy Lynn. This is CBS News.
Sponsored by Progressive Insurance. We offer auto, home, and commercial auto insurance, plus a variety of business insurance options. Visit progressive.com today.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Plans to reroute part of Enbridge Energy's controversial Line 5 in northern Wisconsin are now in the hands of federal regulators. Enbridge aims to address environmental concerns. The tribe's lawyer is Gussie Lord. She says it's not enough.
This reroute is not a solution. It's a full solution to the danger of the current pipeline. In fact, it really extends the dangers of the pipeline and increases the threat of a devastating oil spill.
It's not clear when the Army Corps of Engineers will decide on the application. Six different hunting seasons are underway in Wisconsin. The Department of Natural Resources says early seasons for Canada goose and teal, as well as mourning dove, rail, snipe, and common gallinule, all opened this weekend. The Canada goose population in Wisconsin is about 40% higher than average this year. This is Civic Media News.
The Brewers' winning streak is over. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cuska with Civic Media Sports. It took 11 innings, but the Cincinnati Reds took down the Brewers 4-3 on Sunday thanks to a walk-off single. Still, the Brewers took 3 of 4 games from the Reds and stand 9 games ahead of the Chicago Cubs in the NL Central. Now, Milwaukee comes home to take on the St. Louis Cardinals on Monday afternoon in a 3-game series. The NFL season kicks off this week. The Green Bay Packers play the Philadelphia Eagles Friday night in Brazil. The Packers matchup has plenty of intrigue as as both teams have new defensive coordinators and running backs for this season. Wisconsin Badgers trailed early in the fourth quarter but got two late touchdowns to give the Badgers a 28-14 win over Western Michigan on Friday. Now the Badgers take on FCS foe South Dakota this Saturday at Camp Randall Stadium with a 2:30 kickoff. And this week is the start of conference season in high school football. You can find one of nearly a dozen games around the state right here on Civic Media. And with sports, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear tonight, lows in the mid-50s. More sunshine for Tuesday, a high to the mid-70s and a little breezy. Sunny in upper 70s on Wednesday. A chance of showers and storms into Thursday. It's 67 right now.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Broadcasting live from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy who once tore his ACL playing chess, Pete Schwabba.
Hey everyone, it's producer Conrad. Hope you're having a great Labor Day weekend. Pete and I wanted to spend some time with our families, so today we got some great interviews over the past couple months. Again, hope you're having a great Labor Day weekend. Enjoy safely, and we'll be back tomorrow night. Hope you enjoy.
Great to have you with me on this Thursday night. Technically the last summer Thursday night. And this is typically the last summer weekend in Wisconsin, but it's a long weekend, so I'll take it. And college football starts. It's a big weekend, but we're getting closer. It's Thursday. I hope you had a great day. I'm grateful that you're here with us tonight to talk about the things we love to talk about, movies and TV and comedy and music. And we've got great guests tonight, a great question, all kinds of fun stuff happening tonight on Nightlight. So it's good that you're here. We're broadcasting statewide from beautiful downtown Green Bay. Do you think it's beautiful where we are, Conrad? I mean, I'm looking out the window.
Yeah.
It's not like a ton of beauty, but downtown Green Bay is beautiful, right?
Definitely, yes. Yeah. If you look, well, not out that window, but if you go out the door and look behind us, you got the water right there.
Yeah.
That's what's beautiful over there.
The Brown River. It's beautiful.
Yes.
It's a beautiful place to sit. But it's a summer night. You can't beat it.
It's honestly a nice place to walk along, you know?
It is.
Yeah.
It's a great night, and summer is winding down. What do you think? Do you think summer ends this weekend? Like, will you still act like it's summer? You're going to wear shorts year-round and your high top, so I get it. It's summer. It is an endless summer for Conrad.
Well, I will say it definitely starts to not feel like summer anymore.
Yeah.
That first day when it gets, you know, under 50, somewhere around there.
Under 50.
Okay. Or I guess under 60 I could go, I guess, too. But if I can still golf outside, I don't call it fall yet.
How long will you golf?
Until they tell me no.
Do they shut it down?
Yeah, sometimes they do. But yeah. I mean, there is fall golf, so I guess I take back my statement.
All right. Well said. I don't know. I think this is like, I guess it's more about kids going back to school that feels like the summer is over.
Yep.
And so I guess technically this is kind of the last summer weekend coming up, but there's no better place than Wisconsin in summer. But I love fall. I like that the temperatures come down a little bit. It's beautiful here, and I don't have to wear shorts and show my white legs. So I got that going for me. I honestly, God, my legs look like sausages. I always am self-conscious about them because my buddy Mike Siegel. This is how it happens. Like, when I was a comedian in Chicago in the 90s, a bunch of us would get together and play hoops. We play some pickup games. And the first thing my friend Mike Siegel would always say to me is, nice white legs, Pete. It's like just like a throwaway line. I'm like, I can't help it. Like, what am I supposed to do? Put tanning cream on?
You could do that.
I could. What would that? It's not going to make me, it's not going to get me bigger air. So I'm self-conscious because of one of my best friends. It's not fair. I've never really had a tan, so I don't have much use for, I don't want to say summer, but I'm just not that guy. I'm not going to try to, like, because if I try hard enough, I'll kind of bronze. I'll get like a deep red. But is that worth it?
The sunburn is never worth it.
No, it's not. And sometimes it happens anyway. Even if you put sunblock on, you get that kind of farmer tan going. And what do you think a farmer tan says when he has an actual farmer tan? Does he just call that a tan?
I got tan today.
I got a city folk tan, honey. No. So I can't handle, I just don't like it. So I like fall better, I guess is what I'm saying. But we will talk to Logan Rogge at 7:35 from Travel Wisconsin. He's a great guy, great interview. He's been on the show before. And then we have a really exciting guest at 8:20. Sean Hannish will be here. Sean made a documentary about the Brewers called Just a Bit Outside. And it covers the 82 Brewers and their run to the World Series and kind of what happened. They lost to the Cardinals. I remember that because I was sort of a new Wisconsinite at the time, and the Brewers were in the World Series. I was like, oh, wow. So all my friends were heartbroken that the Brewers did not win. But Sean has a documentary about it. And this kind of fascinates me. Like, you know, Sean, I looked at his IMDb page. He's also a writer and director of narrative films. And he's worked with some pretty big actors, Michelle Monaghan, Minnie Driver. He's got good credits. Like, this guy is a bona fide filmmaker. And I love that he's had success as a narrative film director. And then he goes and makes this documentary. My buddy Steve Burrows has done that. Also a Wisconsinite. And that's a talent. You know, when you can kind of master both mediums. Anyway, Just a Bit Outside will be opening, I think, September 13th. We'll get all the we'll get the lowdown from Sean when he's here. That'll be a fun visit. And did he sound cool, Conrad, when you were interacting with him?
Definitely, yeah.
Or was he like, whatever, man, yeah, I'll be there?
No, he was not like that.
He's got one of those pictures, like, I looked him up. He just looks like a nice guy.
Yeah, he does.
You know, I can't see him. But honestly, like, if he came on and he was kind of a jerk, that would kind of be funny, too. I'd be okay with that because I wouldn't be expecting it, you know? So, but I'm sure he's not. Sean Hannish will be here at 8:20. We will talk about his documentary. I'm curious to see it. And, boy, that was way before your time, huh? What have you heard about that? I'm sure your folks are Brewer fans.
Well, yeah, that was way before my time. About 18 years.
Okay. Yeah. Did your parents even know each other yet? Probably not.
No, they did not.
Conrad was not even a thought.
Nope.
All right. So, but they're both big Brewer fans.
I would say my dad is, you know, they don't get much into baseball.
Okay.
But, I mean, yeah, I'm a big Brewers fan, so.
It's tough with baseball. I mean, even if you're a big baseball fan, you can't watch 162 games.
Well, it's just, yeah, that's...
I love that it's on if you want something or if you want to watch sports, but, you know.
I will say they made it easier with the time clock for pitchers now.
Yeah, apparently.
It goes by in like 2 hours or something around there.
I haven't watched any baseball this summer, so I don't even know. But everybody I've talked to said the same thing you're saying.
Well, if you're a Chicago White Sox fan this year, that sucks for you.
Oh, God. I'm not a Sox fan, but all my friends, I grew up cheering for the Cubs. And, you know, they're making a little push here at the end with your boy, Craig Counsell. But the Sox, like, all my Sox fan friends are, like, just posting funny stuff. Like, it's just gotten to the point where they're so bad it's laughable. And that's sad.
Well, I mean, I don't even know what they're playing for anymore. They've been out of contention for a while.
Yeah, but they got to play. Can't just be like, come on, coach. What are we doing here?
So I saw this tweet today. I shared it with you. I don't know if you looked at it, but yesterday at the game, some guy came into the stadium and saw 17 people in the stands.
Oh, I did not see that.
And there's a picture of it. Only 17 people in the in his first pitch.
That is awful.
Yeah, that's like the Oakland A's last year.
There are more people at a Pony League game.
Yes.
And they're probably seeing better baseball.
Yeah.
No, a friend of mine posted, I think a guy stole second and the catcher threw it to second. Hit the guy in the face. He wasn't even waiting for it. It's awful. It's so bad.
Currently in the White Sox.
Terrible. But anyway, getting back to summer in Wisconsin, it's winding down. Logan Rogge is here. We're going to talk a little bit about summer this weekend, what we can look forward to. But our question tonight is, what's the coolest place you went to this summer in Wisconsin? What is the coolest Wisconsin place you went this summer? Let us know. And we'll share ours too. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Conrad, you cannot say your apartment. That is not acceptable.
Okay, I'll say...
Even though there's no place like home.
The Civic Media Studio
there in Green Bay. That's much better. So let us know the coolest place you went this summer in our state. It is the state of summer, as I like to call it, Wisconsin. This is national. This is funny. You updated the sheet. We always talk about days of the year.
Yep.
And I saw, the first thing I saw was more herb and then less salt day. I'm like, what a weird day that is. And then I'm like, oh, herb. Okay. More herb. Like they're trying to get people to cut down on salt.
Yes.
That makes sense. Because I know people that still say herb. Yeah. You know, make something at home. Put some herbs in there. I'm like, no, it's not a herb.
Who's herb?
Who's herb? And don't cook him.
Yeah.
You know, and I have also friends that still say salmon instead of salmon.
Well, that's bad.
Yeah, they're in their 40s. So I thought that was funny. So Herb Day, maybe that was a question. What's your favorite herb?
I don't even know.
I would say Herb Tarlick from WKRP in Cincinnati. You sent me this thing too yesterday. I thought it was cool. This kid goes into a museum and breaks a 3,500-year-old artifact. It was a jar from the time of, like, well, before Jesus walked the earth. And this 4-year-old spaz knocks it over and breaks it.
So I got to say something about it, though. Why is it just in the open for?
Well, they said that's how they like people to view art in this museum. It's the Schecht, I think, called museum. It's called the Schecht Museum in Israel. It was positioned at the entrance. It was dated the Middle Bronze Age between 2200 and 1500 BC, predates the time of King David and King Solomon, and is characteristic of the Canaan region. I mean, part of that is on the museum, right?
Yes.
A kid,
has to be.
He probably thought there were like cookies in there or something. Yeah. And the kid's dad was like, oh, I was upset with him. Well, yeah, I can't really blame the kid.
That's what I was thinking too. Like, how much blame can you really put on a 4-year-old?
Right. Where were the parents? Like, they didn't see that artifact when they walked in.
Yeah.
Hey, we better keep our spaz kid from that. He's not the most coordinated kid in the world. And they said the museum is going to put it together and they're going to invite them back to have another tour so they can have a look. I guarantee this time the kid will be in a straitjacket. But the museum's very forgiving. So, all right, we got a lot to talk about. There's some good shows coming out. And Logan Rogge is here at 7:35. Great to have you with me on the last Thursday of summer. This is Pete Schwabba in Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
These are the words you spoke. Blow up your TV. Throw away your paper. Go to the country. Build you a home. Plant a little garden. Eat a lot of peaches.
You're listening to the Shaw WAUK, Waukesha's home for Up North News Radio.
Summer may be coming to an end, but there's still time to enjoy a beer with your neighbors at Merrill Crest Park, September 5th through the 7th for Waukesha Parks, Rec, and Forestry's Neighborhood Beer Garden. Enjoy live music, food, socializing with neighbors, and of course, beer. The excitement is already brewing for this year's before and after school program as space is filled quickly. But stay tuned for so many more fun things to do. Visit the WaukeshaWI.gov activity guide for more information.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey. Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The Shaw, WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You've seen her dressed in blue. See the sky in front of you.
Welcome back. We are. Do you have a Morton's toe, Conrad?
I do not.
You have a more traditional toe outline on your foot?
I think.
All right, that's good. Your wife will not be the boss. This is exciting. We're going to pivot here and talk about something a little more serious, but with a guy who is a really fun interview. He's been here before. We've talked about his film, Mom and Dad's Nipple Factory, a very cool title, and certainly a title that gets your attention. And he joins us, the director of the film, joins us now on Nightlight. Justin Superstar is back. Hey, buddy, how are you?
Thank you. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Doing very well. What? All right. Aside from the movie, what's new with you since we last spoke? Catch us up.
Well, if you hear screaming in the background, it's a three-month-old baby.
That's acceptable.
Not a hostage situation.
Okay.
So that is...
If I hear your wife screaming, I'm going to call the authorities. But if it's a baby, that's fine.
It's a type of hostage situation, I'll say. I'm not going to say it's not one, but it's a type of hostage situation.
Yeah, you're the hostage.
Old baby. Yeah. No, it's great, though. And everyone's like, oh, my God, are you so tired? But she's been sleeping like 10, 11 hours a night. So so far I've lucked out.
Wow.
Knocking on all the wood. It's going to work out.
Because your wife, you were very close. I think you were going to classes before you were on, and we were trying to schedule your appearance on the show, if I'm not mistaken, around your Lamas or birthing classes or whatever they were. So congratulations, and everything went well.
Yeah, everything was great. Mom's doing great. Baby's doing awesome. And I think it's kind of amazing thing about doing a documentary about your family, because really me working on this film led me on this path to eventually move back to the Midwest here. And I think being in the Midwest, sort of like, I guess, kind of a stereotype, but I do think that in some ways, this film about my family generated the right situation for us to want to procreate. It's not that, was not that appealing in Los Angeles, for sure. And so it's like, I think this is also what's great. Like, I know that the film is coming out on September 10th, and I know we could make like $10 and it would still have changed my life in such an amazing way. So I try to keep that as like a positive just point of view.
Isn't that interesting? You know, I'll say this too. I think I told you last time I spent 14 years in LA and we moved back. I don't know that I don't think I've met anybody that regrets, and there's a lot I miss about LA. I liked living there, but you know, and maybe it's just, you try not to have regrets, but there's something about being by family. You just can't, I won't ever say I regret that move. You know what I mean? And I think most people Absolutely. Feel that way.
And we live about 8 minutes from the airport. And so my compromise was like, I'll move to the Midwest, but I want to be like minutes away from everywhere else in the world. And so I would do speed runs all of last year when I was traveling. And my record from you know, no joke, from leaving the garage to being past security at Minneapolis Airport was 12 minutes and 57 seconds.
Holy smokes.
That is awesome. And I was very proud of myself. You're dealing with all these different TSA situations and different lines, and sometimes people cut in front of you. And so 12 minutes and 57 seconds past security, and then I'm off to LA or wherever I'm going. So that is,
wow,
that was like my compromise. It's pretty epic.
I see. What I did was I moved to the edge of the universe, a little community called Marinette, Wisconsin. I have usually two flights to wherever I'm going and an hour long car drive before that. So, and sometimes that's, you know, faster than going to LAX from where we lived in the Valley. So it's a toss up, but it sounds like you've got
absolutely
a pretty good situation there. Do you, how long have you been back now?
So I've been back for about 4 years, four or five okay. years. So we moved right. We were like in the full-on face mask era of the pandemic.
Oh, yeah. Moved.
And, you know, every other seat, like, booked for flights and that kind of thing. So it was really like, I think that was kind of also part of the journey of moving back to the Midwest, was like, you're coming from LA, where it's really just like the height of, you wouldn't even walk on the same side of the street as people, because it is just a lot more socially congested. And then coming back to the Midwest, it just felt like the trees and the grass and the people, like, it just felt like the whole universe was open to us, just like being outside. We moved in August and it was great. And the same thing, like, I have no regrets being back here. And I feel like if I would have told myself 20, 25 years ago, all the places I would have lived and that I'm going to be happiest, like living in Minneapolis, an hour and a half from my hometown, I'd be like, that guy sounds lame. But it's not true. It's great out here. Like, we have it good, I think.
I have those moments too. Like, when I think, boy, this is a really good seltzer water. And I think, God, 21-year-old Pete would be so disappointed in me. That's such a weird thing.
A really
thing.
Good seltzer water.
Yeah, wow. Or whatever it is.
Is this a new flavor of LaCroix that you're jamming on?
The blackberry cucumber.
Is it LaCroix or bubbly? Yeah. There's like the cola version of LaCroix, which is great. But there's like a new one that's melted popsicle. And I'm just like, what kind of bubbly water are they going to think of next?
See,
that's my next documentary. All right,
Pete,
the bubbly water doc. It's got to happen. People need it.
I will cross that off the list. And look at us, just two mid transplants again, talking about seltzer water. That's fantastic. But it's so easy to live here. I mean, I know you're removed from maybe more work, or you have to work a little harder to generate it maybe, but it is just so easy to live in the Midwest. And the winter sucks. I'm not a big fan, but other than that, yeah, I'll take it. Not too bad.
Absolutely. So it's been like, I think we talked back in March, right?
That sounds about right, yeah.
That was our last time chatting. And it's like amazing the journey that a feature documentary has. It has so much life to it because it really is filled with, it's filled with life. It's filled with people's like honesty and these genuine moments. And so it's been pretty exciting because along this journey, we've been kind of picking up heroes for the film. And I think it's going to be announced in a deadline pretty soon, but we did sign Mayim Bialik. She's from Blossom. She's from Bang Theory. She hosted Jeopardy. And so she's come on as an executive producer.
Wow.
For the film, which is just like pretty amazing. She also is a lactation specialist outside of like being on one of the most successful TV shows of all time with Big Bang Theory. And so when she heard about this project and kind of got to her by way of my producers, it was something where she really felt like the power and the meaning of the story, which is about my very conservative Christian parents. After my mom's unilateral mastectomy and reconstruction, my very shy, quiet, conservative Christian dad, who probably never said the word nipple to us growing up, took over my sister's old bedroom in the house we grew up in and turned it into this like nipple laboratory to build my mom the perfect replacement nipple so she could feel complete again. And it's like this very wholesome story about family unity and becoming whole again and that kind of thing. And it just resonated with her. And so we were super lucky where she really wanted to be a part of the film. She's got millions of Instagram followers.
Yeah.
And you just like really just feel really fortunate to have people like that who are excited about this Wisconsin story.
Yeah. Let's pick it up there when we come back, because I want to find, I'm always fascinated by people who sign executive producers after the film is done. And how you go about doing that, because that's not easy to do. So we'll pick it up there. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwab. But Justin Superstar is here talking about his documentary, Mom and Dad's Nipple Factory. We'll be right back for more with Justin on Nightlight with Pete Schwab on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK, Waukesha's home for the Todd Allball Show.
CBS News brief, President Biden says Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris is the only rational choice for president in November. The two appeared at a Labor Day event in Pittsburgh, with her saying her campaign is about the people.
We fight for a future of dignity, respect, and opportunity for all people.
There have been strikes and protests in Israel over the Hamas killing of six more hostages. CBS's MTS Taieb is there.
The national strike saw Israel's main airport shut and its economy grind to a virtual halt for hours, as public anger also exploded into a second night of street protests.
The U.S. seizes a plane belonging to Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. Correspondent Christian Benavides says it has this comparison.
This being seized, according to what officials are telling me, is essentially as if the government has just seized Venezuela's version of Air Force One.
CBS News Brief. I'm Matt Piper.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Plans to reroute part of Enbridge Energy's controversial Line 5 in northern Wisconsin are now in the hands of federal regulators. Enbridge aims to address environmental concerns. The tribe's lawyer is Gussie Lord. She says it's not enough.
This reroute is not a solution. It's a full solution to the danger of the current pipeline. In fact, it really extends the dangers of the pipeline and increases the threat of a devastating oil spill.
It's not clear when the Army Corps of Engineers will decide on the application. Six different hunting seasons are underway in Wisconsin. The Department of Natural Resources says early seasons for Canada goose and teal, as well as mourning dove, rail, snipe, and common gallinule, all opened this weekend. The Canada goose population in Wisconsin is about 40% higher than average this year. This is Civic Media News.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. If you're a celebrity, every summer is the summer to get drunk in the Hamptons and run off the road. But this is the summer to get caught doing so. First, it was Justin Timberlake, and now we'll add disgraced TV host Matt Lauer's daughter, Rami, to the list. Page Six reports that Rami, 20 years old and an avid equestrian, went off the road in the early morning hours of July 5th and fled the scene, but left a license plate behind. Someone should have told her that horses don't need license plates. The hat worn by Harrison Ford in the movie Indiana Jones Temple of Doom recently sold in an auction for $630,000. The hat was showcased early in the film when Jones and Short Round jumped from a plane about to crash. The high cost for the hat was much more than other celebrity items that were auctioned off, such as Justin Timberlake's French toast that went for just over $1,000 in 2000, or Scarlett Johansson's used tissue from The Tonight Show in 2008. True stories. Check them out.
For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weekdays from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear tonight, lows in the mid-50s. More sunshine for Tuesday, a high to the mid-70s and a little breezy. Sunny in upper 70s on Wednesday. A chance of showers and storms into Thursday. It's 69 degrees right now.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
Co-founder of the Lincoln Project, Rick Wilson.
Trump is now pre-gaming for Republican elections boards at the county and state levels across this country to try to put their thumb on the scale for Trump. And if they don't win on that front, they may resort to violence again, which is why at the Lincoln Project, our goal is not to beat Trump. Our goal is to beat Trump like a rented mule. Our goal is to beat Trump so bad that his bruises have bruises.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Earl Ingram.
Mayor Brian Kennedy of Glendale.
I've heard Republicans say this is a coup. Nobody voted for Kamala Harris. Yeah, when I voted for Joe Biden in the primaries, I was voting for Kamala Harris to be his vice presidential running mate. In this case, Joe Biden stepped aside. We nominated Kamala Harris.
I think it's a little bit like the Dodgers complaining that the Braves starting pitcher who injured his shoulder yesterday isn't starting today.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
to a Tuesday night edition of Nightlight. If you're watching on the stream, great to have you with us wherever you are in our state. We are talking to a native Wisconsinite who lives over near the Twin Cities right now, director Justin Superstar, who made a film called Mom and Dad's Nipple Factory, an award-winning documentary that will soon be released. He's going to give us some information on that as well. But first, Justin, let's get back to Mayim Bialik, formerly Blossom, a.k.a. Blossom, if you will. How did you get her involved? Did you approach her? Did you know she was interested in this topic? How did that work?
So something where it's, this is what's great about having like incredible producers who are helping. So I'm linked up with this guy, Jason, who had a, I think Oscar nominated short doc a couple years ago. And he's someone who is just like absolutely brilliant. He's been really instrumental to the success of this film, and someone who is connected within Hollywood. And so it was something where throughout the years, because this project was going on for years, there would be different names that would kind of float up, like we should talk to this person, especially if they're linked to the breast cancer community or cause. And so at some point, Mayim's name came up, and I think we just had inroads to talk with some of her people and get the film to her. And this is a film where people just really have a very emotional, intense reaction to it, especially if they're involved in the circles of women's health or really have had cancer touch their lives, which is like, I mean, basically everyone, right?
Right.
And was something where we know if we can get the film to someone, they're likely going to become a champion for us. And so just through this way and that, eventually it got to her. And it's something where she's never been an executive producer on a documentary before. Mm. This will be like the first one. So that it's pretty notable that this is how she wants to come in and be a part of this side of the film industry.
Have you had a lot of talks with her? Has it all been done basically over email and phone and contracts and whatever? Or have you had sit downs with her where she wants to know the plan? Like, how involved is she other than just putting her name on it?
So we just the other week, we went out to L.A. It was me, and then my mom was joining us via Zoom, and we shot like an hour and a half of social media content that we're hoping is going to go up on her Instagram and other places. So nice. That was my first chance to like meet her in person, and just like a really wonderful, warm person. I brought a bunch of like Play-Doh and like art supplies, and we did what we called the nipple challenge, where there was a Play-Doh round, and we both built a nipple out of Play-Doh, and there was a charcoal round, and we both drew a nipple on charcoal. And my mom, working in the nipple industry, she judged her favorite. So we ended up tying, which is very fair. But she is just like someone who is just an amazing advocate for the film, for the causes it brings up, and someone where if we just get a fraction of a percent of her audience, it just gets that initial oomph to get it out into the world. And I think this will have a virality on Facebook. Like, there's so many Facebook groups for people going through these types of experiences that I just think when people see it, they're like, oh my God, I can't believe this exists. I need to send it to 10 people. Yeah. That's how we really get the word out and succeed.
So you have some news. It's a September release. Where can people see the film?
It's going to be September 10th. You can already pre-order the DVD on Amazon, which is pretty great to have a DVD release. Yeah. It's something a lot of people at the Q&As afterwards, especially older folks or folks who love physical media, asked about.
We're physical going to be media, I love it.
That, you know, it's how it is. We're going to be, I believe, on Fandango has a streaming service. It's going to be available for rent or purchase on Apple, on Amazon Prime. All the usual suspects, we should be there. And it's going to be pretty surreal because this has been like, it'll be almost 10 years since I started this project. And that is to have it out there for people is pretty wild.
Well, congratulations on the release. That's, pardon me, it's exciting. And it's exciting to have just the cohesion between your new executive producer who can alert people to it very quickly and have a place you can send people, you know, because I know people that had films 10 years ago didn't know what to do with them. And they had nowhere to steer people. So this is really great for your film, and I hope it puts a lot of eyes on it. So congrats on that. What's your mom's reaction to the film? First of all, talk about, like, your parents seem like very private people. What were they like when you approached them with the idea, and how do they feel about the film?
Yeah, great question. So it really, like many great things, it started with a lie. I told my mom and dad, I was like, I'm going to film for a weekend or two. It's going to be a 5 to 7 minute short documentary. I didn't even think my dad was going to talk because he's just so shy. Like, literally, we would show this in the Midwest area, and there'd be people who have known my dad and my parents for 40 years. And they'd say, I heard your dad say more words over the course of 82 minutes than over the course of 40 years. He really is just that private and that shy. So I told him it was going to be a short, and I started working on it back in 2015. I couldn't really figure out like the heart of the story. I was doing it about my parents' business, and I just didn't really find it that compelling. The original version of the film was actually my dad building me a third nipple from scratch. So I went through the whole molding process. Oh, wow. He color matched me, all that kind of stuff. But I didn't feel like it had like heart to it. And so once I kind of cracked the code, this is actually about my parents' love story. Once it became a love story, like a romantic comedy almost, that's when it became bigger. And I started interviewing people that they're customers and just really saw the beauty and the way people react. And so my mom in particular is such an incredible people person that for her to be able to share this story and be able to go to film, like we did, I think 15 plus film festivals, like the ones that she was able to go to, she just like lights up like a light bulb when she's around people, especially other cancer survivors, and is able to receive people's stories.
Jeez.
And I remember early on in this process, as I'm filming and editing through the pandemic and all this kind of stuff, one of those little like postcard, I hope this happens someday moments for me was like, I hope someday I'm at a film festival and I just see a line of people who want to talk to my mom, and she's just glowing and she's so happy. And that was something that I've had the honor now, and I get emotional just thinking about it, but like I've had the honor of seeing her be able to have those moments time and time again as we've screened across the country. And so that is something where she's just like, I love this movie, Justin. I love it. We've watched it a million times. We did a screening in LA like maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago. It was one of our first screenings. It was a buyer screening. So it was all the major places were there, and they didn't buy it, but that's fine. And on the way home, my mom and I, of course, were sitting next to each other, and she's in her 70s, and she kind of scooted up next to me, and she grabbed my arm, and she's like, Justin, I love having adventures with you. And I was just like, oh, just like the sweetest thing. So yeah, she's loved it, and she genuinely loves the film, which is great.
That is so great. What a great story. What a great gift you've given your parents. I mean, that's so fantastic. Just because you said buyer screening gave me a pain in my stomach. I made a film years ago. We had a buyer screening. My producer prepared me for it. He said, now listen, people are going to walk out. That's what they do. They're looking for what they want. They know what they want. Don't take it personally. It doesn't mean they don't like your film. Okay, so we sit there through the whole screening. Nobody leaves, Justin. And I'm going, we're going to have a bidding war here. This is going to be great. And nobody put a bid on it, but they were all like, hey, really nice film. But they didn't know how to market it. And I'm like, I'd rather you hated it and said, we can sell this. You know what I mean? It was like,
right,
like a cruel tease. So I feel your pain that, there. That's rough.
Yes. And it was weird too, because same thing, like, and I think a buyer screen, at least for me, the experience was that like, they didn't really show a lot of emotion, and I'm sort of trying to read the crowd. This is 2022 and I haven't really screened it before. And so I'm getting like basically not zero, but pretty close to zero reaction, because people are just sitting there and they're thinking about that marketing side of it. How do I market this film called Mom and Dad's Nipple Factory? You know, with no, it's not about a famous person or anything like that. And so it's the same thing where there was no, it was rejection. But at the end of the day, like, I love the path that the film has had, and it's almost to not really the finish line, but just kind of the next start line. This is one that I've got it to the best place it can get, and now it kind of has to live its life. And that's pretty weird, but something that I'm psyched about, honestly.
It really surprises me. I would think with all the people who deal with cancer, and specifically breast cancer, I cannot believe this seems like a tailor-made, easily, at least at the very minimal, a niche film that you could market, or that they could market. So you said you're getting close to the finish line, if not already there. What's been your favorite process? You're almost done with post, basically. You're in the marketing phase or whatever. But between pre-production, production, and post, and even when you concepted it, what's been your favorite experience through the whole process?
Yeah, we locked the cut probably a year, maybe a year and a half ago. So it's been in the really that, you know, as well, like in this sort of film festival, find a buyer kind of phase, find the right time to release. And we were originally going to release in April. But I'll tell you, like, every step of making this film has been like a complete nightmare. Like, truly, like, and I actually have a list that I had been keeping for a while of like things that went wrong making Mom and Dad's Nibble Factory, to remind myself of hard drive failures and flaky audio mixers and, you know, an endless amount of things that went wrong. I think honestly for me, like, our first film festival run was amazing. And that's something where the creative part of it is really done and you're able to see it with audiences. And even then, when we were doing the film festival run, the first couple screenings, we would have people actually pass out during the screening. And I was like,
wow,
what is going on? At a very specific part, like, but a kind of a zone, we couldn't figure it out. Like, our world premiere was at the Milwaukee Film Festival and we had a sold out 1,000-seat theater. And there's a certain part, the movie's just really starting to get kicking. And there's a certain part where someone like passed out. And I'm like, what's going on? I figured it out. There's a section where they're talking about, my dad's talking about a brake line bleeder as being the thing that kind of solves this particular like medical issue. And it was a combination of saying the word bleeder a bunch, showing like a syringe, I think, and like some sound effects and some CGI I had. And I think it was triggering people who had a sensitivity to that. And it was really weird and so frustrating. So I had to go back, unlock the cut, change the graphics, delete a couple words. And now, thank God, no one has passed out since then. But like, that is just one of those like nightmare situations where I'm like, am I going to have to like reopen the whole film? But outside the film festival run, one thing that was super memorable to me was actually the color correction session, because I was able to do that in person. We worked with this incredible woman, Maria, who is out in New York City. So I flew to New York to work with her. She's colored Super Bowl commercials. And here she is at this big fancy place in Manhattan. And this post house, they gave me a 75% discount because they loved the film and it resonated with them. And so it was just great working with Maria. She was just a total pro. We only had a couple days. She was so passionate to get it right. I was telling her all the film festivals that we had been rejected from, and she was just furious. She was slamming her fist on the table. She's like, they're wrong, damn it, they're wrong. You know, and I'm like, South by Sundance, rejected, rejected, rejected. And she was so mad about that. But someone who I know, you just meet all these great people along the way, and someone I'm excited that she's going to be able to share her work with the world comes September 10th.
It's so fun too, that when you meet people that it sounds like they just bought into what you were trying to do. And there's a validation in that too, that you can't put a price on it. It makes you feel so good when you meet other people that just join in. It's great. We have a couple more minutes. Justin Superstar is here. He's the director of Mom and Dad's Nipple Factory. It'll be released September 10th. On Fandango at Home, Apple, and Amazon, and all kinds of streaming platforms. So check that out. We'll have a couple more minutes with Justin coming up next on Nightlight with Pete Schwabe on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is the Shaw WAUK. When you think about Labor Day and what it means, do you think about Wisconsin? You should, but let's go back to explain. In the mid-1800s, activists pushed for a day to recognize workers' contributions. President Grover Cleveland signed a law in 1894, making the first Monday of every September a national holiday. So where did the first labor union form in Wisconsin? Wausau? Green Bay? Milwaukee? The answer coming up. The Badger State has an impressive history. Bricklayers and carpenters formed unions in the 1840s and were the first to push for workers' compensation and unemployment insurance. Now, did you guess? This all happened first in Milwaukee. The state's labor unions formed in 1847. The National Labor Union didn't form until 1866, 19 years later, leading the way for other states is this slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
On tomorrow night's, pardon me, what is going on? Conrad, I need a cough drop. Do we have cough drops?
I don't think so.
God, you think they'd stock this place? I don't get it. pardon me. On tomorrow night's show, Mike Toomey, comedian and TV host, will be here, and Milwaukee film critic Matt Miller. That's on tomorrow night's Nightlight. Right now, we have a few more minutes with director Justin Superstar. His film is Mom and Dad's Nipple Factory. You can check it out. It drops September 10th on many streaming platforms, specifically Fandango, Apple, and Amazon. Justin, it's such a unique topic, and it hit you so close to home. So I don't even know where you would turn in terms of finding inspiration from other directors, because it's so personal. But do you have directors that you have been inspired by or that you tried to emulate while you were making the film?
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of emulate, I mean, it's that's a trickier one. Like, there's lessons I've learned from making previous films, which I think it's more telling myself what not to do. I remember my first film, it was the first festival we were at, and one of the judges, she told me, she's like, you use too much music in your film. And I never forgot that, because I was like, maybe I'm using too much music. But like, as a kid growing up, maybe I'm sure you remember this film, but there's a documentary called American Movie by Chris Smith. And that was something that came out 1998, 1999. I'm in like high school kind of era. And I remember seeing this documentary, and it's a great rewatch, because it's an incredible, incredible film. And it's about this guy, Mark, and his Orchard. Buddy Mike, who are these filmmakers in Milwaukee. And it's about these incredible things that they're able to do, and the way that they're able to whip up all this support in their community. And I remember watching that as a 17-year-old, 18-year-old, and just being so inspired by it. I'm like, here's other filmmakers in Wisconsin, because my dream job was in Eau Claire was, oh, maybe I can get a job running a camera for the local news. And that was like the top of my creative aspirations, you know? And so I remember just the way that was put together. The characters were so funny. Like, it's got like a storyline to it. And so that was a film that really resonated with me early on. And so I'd love to someday meet that director. He's doing a lot more stuff, kind of documentary, a lot of like kind of fast hitting documentaries for Netflix now, which is pretty great. That one was really inspiring to me. And, you know, I just am really drawn. There's another doc called The Final Member, which is about a penis museum in like Sweden or something like that.
Oh, we took the kids to that last year. Yeah.
Sure. You guys. Yeah. I was on the Disney cruise, I'm sure. And it's just a really well put together doc that's got like a full story arc to it. That one's always really inspiring. And there's another doc I'd recommend called Finders Keepers, which is about a guy who has like a foot that ends up like an actual human remains foot that ends up in like a smoker that someone else buys and turns into like a tourist attraction. So I remember seeing Finders Keepers, and it's such a trip because the characters are so great. I remember seeing that at a festival probably back in 2015 when my first doc came out, and the audience is going nuts because the characters are just wild, and it's such a ride. And I remember thinking to myself, I would love to have a documentary that feels like you're going on a ride. And that's something where with Mom and Dad's Nibble Factory, to build it with as much of a three-act structure as you can, working from, of course, like what happened in real life. And to build this story where people feel like everything in the first 15 minutes pays off by the end of the film. And so that was a big goal of mine. And that's something where I've gotten that feedback before from festivals and other places where people feel like they're going in this adventure, this ride, and this sort of problem solving journey. But how do you build the perfect nipple, and how do you make someone feel whole again? And so that's something where I'm proud. I think we got there with that.
That's a great answer. We have a couple minutes left. Do you, after you make a film like this and a story that's so close to you, and your family was involved, the story just kind of fell in your lap because it was your life. How do you choose a different subject now? What do you go to next?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've been thinking about it, and it is, there is a moment where it's so hard to finish a documentary that you kind of, you're like, I don't want to do that ever again. Or I mean, now I've made two feature documentaries, and I kind of feel like I have to do three. And when people would ask me last year, what are you working on next, I'm like, her name is Dahlia, she's going to be born in 3 months. So this, she was my project. She's been a great chill baby, thankfully. And I think for my next project, like, I've been thinking about digging into my own personal, not like myself as the subject, but I was a part of a lot of like very early internet. And I was one of the first like people on Vimeo. I was one of the first like 30 people on Tumblr. My friend started Tumblr. I was a part of all these like early internet moments. And so I feel like there's something within that ground, because I was in New York. I was a part of a startup, very early kind of YouTube days. I worked, and that startup got acquired, not for billions of dollars, but enough for us to keep our jobs and have those jobs move over to Google. And so there's something in that kind of tech space, because with documentaries, they always ask you, well, why are you the one to tell this story? Mm. And it's something where I have a lot of personal experience, a lot of archival. And so something in that kind of tech world, I'd love to do something that's like about something that people have heard about.
Yeah.
So that's going to be kind of the next goal if I lace up the old boots again.
That sounds great. Well, I hope you get to make that. And I wish you luck. September 10th. Your blood, sweat, and tears drops on all these great platforms. Check out the movie, folks. Mom and Dad's Nipple Factory. Justin Superstar, nice enough to spend some time with us tonight here on Nightlight. And congrats on the baby again, buddy. That's pretty cool.
Thank you. Can't wait to be back again for the next film.
I hope so. Keep us posted, okay? All right, fantastic. Justin Superstar. Have a great night, Justin. Thanks so much.
Thanks, you too.
Bye. All right. That's exciting. I have not seen this whole film. I'm very excited to see this. And that blew me away that marketers could pass on something that so many people have experience with. So good stuff, though. Check it out September 10th. I want to thank my guests, Justin Superstar, obviously. I'm Pete Schwabe. Good night, Wisconsin.
Take me to your best friend's house. Go around this roundabout. Oh yeah, oh yeah. Oh, take me to your best friend's house. I loved you then, and I love you now. Oh yeah. Oh, don't take me to
the Shaw. WAUK.
Hey, Wisconsin, it's construction season, and the Wisconsin DOT wants to help you safely navigate work zones. Check 511WI.gov or download the app for road work or closures on your route. Know before you go with 511 Wisconsin. Sponsored by the Wisconsin DOT.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinair on Air with Jane Matinair. Weekdays 10 till noon on The Shaw. 101.1 FM and 540 AM WAUK. And on the Civic Media app. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.